you guys. Welcome back to another Sports Talk with Silos on the Real Talk with Silos podcast. I'm your host, Silos, and today we're back with my brother, the one and only AJ. What's up, man? I know it's been rough. How you doing?
Yeah, man. It's been a rough, it hasn't been a full 24 hours yet, but it's been pretty rough. But let's get into it, man.
Yeah, man. First things first, man, you know, this game was really bad yesterday, guys. Like, it was really bad. We had a lot of injuries, and, you know, even afterwards, friendships were almost broken, and today has just been the ringer. It has been crazy today, just trying to recuperate on what happened. Honestly, yeah. Do you want to start on the injuries, or would you want to just
We could just go get into the entire game. I mean, first of all, because injuries are part of the game. So, you know, for me, I think my biggest takeaway from last night, other than being blown out, is the injuries. Dragic being out probably now for the rest of the series. I mean, that is absolutely...
What's crazy is they still have him listed as doubtful. Like, it's not a for sure thing. It wasn't an Achilles. It was a, I can't pronounce exactly what it is. It's a plankers. It's something that starts with a plank. It's supposed to be the ligaments that connects your heel to your toes. That he teared it. I'm guessing that's what it is.
Yeah, he tore it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And probably the reason why they have him as doubtful, remember, is because he's getting reevaluated. You know, what happens is that they don't want to rule out a season until they get a second opinion, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, his first opinion, they were like, hey, that's, you know, which is most likely their team physician, who, by the way, the Heat's team physician, anybody in the NBA will tell you, this is not a fan perspective. This is straight up. Anyone would tell you Miami has the best medical team in the NBA.
So, well, you know what's crazy? You could ask Ray Allen.
Yeah, it's not even close. It doesn't matter who you ask. You can ask probably Danny Ainge.
Mike Miller. You can ask everyone who's ever played for us.
Anyone that played for us, anyone that hates us. Miami is two things Miami thrives on, and that's the medical team and Andy Ellisberg, who understands the accounting for the NBA. He understands the CBA and all that. So... So he's getting a second opinion. So that's why the doubtful is there, because they just haven't ruled it out for the series. Most likely, I anticipate that either later on tonight or tomorrow. But that was rough for him to go out that way, because Jokic has never been at this level before. He finally gets here at 34 and he gets a major injury like that. Even though it's not an Achilles, that is a significant injury, according to doctors, a doctor that I talked to. He said that's a significant injury, you know, because, you know, obviously aside from it actually being your foot, like you said, the ligament that connects, right in the middle of your foot, you need that, you know, and the way Dragic moves and he stops and, you know, all, just think about everything that he needs or that everything that he does with his feet. So it's a bad injury. It's a debilitating injury, and most likely he's out for the season or for the rest of this series. And then also we got news about Bam being doubtful for Friday's game because of his. Now, we've been saying shoulder, but they're actually listing it as a neck
strain. Yeah.
Who knows how long that's been going.
Well, yeah. And what's crazy about that, too, the thing is that last night during the game, there was reports that they had a supplement to give him so he could feel better. It's kind of ridiculous to say.
Probably a painkiller.
Yeah, but he's afraid of needles, so he didn't do it. So.
But at the same time, it's like you pump yourself with painkillers, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So that's the other thing, you know?
So I actually have it up here for Dragic. It's called a plantar tear. Mm-hmm. That is, that's what happened to his foot. That just sounds painful, guys.
We're not you know, medical experts, but I asked a couple of doctors about, or I asked one doctor specifically who could actually give me an answer. I asked a couple, but, you know, others, they weren't 100% sure how significant it was going to be for, they said for any athlete, it'll be significant. When I asked a doctor who actually works with athletes and whatnot, he said it's bad for basketball, period. You know, there's no way around it. You know, he could go ahead. And then it depends on how significant the tear is too, because even if it's a small tear, you run the risk of making
it work. Yep.
So, you know, that's why it's such a, you know, you need your feet. But in any case, that was literally what made, you know, the rain yesterday worse. You know, when they say, when it rains, it pours. The way that Miami came out, it looked very promising. You know, up by as much as 13 to start the first quarter. I mean, we really smacked them in the mouth. And literally, they ended. You would think that at least we would have the lead in the quarter. And the Lakers came back. And by the end of the first quarter, they had the lead. And right after that, you started to get a feel that, okay, they're stretching out, we're stretching out, but then Miami will come right back and hit them. And we got up, we got back up, we got back the lead at 43, I believe it was 43 to 41 after that Tyler Hero 3. So
that second foul happened, and then that's when we went downhill from there.
Yeah, it went downhill from there. I believe they went on a 55 to 25 run, something
Jesus
crazy like that.
Jesus Christ.
And it was over. It literally was. It ended in the third quarter. Again, we've talked about third quarters on here. And actually, it was probably over at the half, because it was a very big lead they had at the half. Miami went ice cold on offense. You just can't do that versus this Laker team. One of the things that I've been hearing a lot before the finals started, and I didn't want to believe it, but you sort of get the sense that that's the case. They said Miami has to play perfect to beat the Lakers. And at first I'm like, okay, no, you guys are kind of overrating, but they're absolutely correct. Miami has to play perfect to beat the Lakers, simply because you have two perennial all-stars that literally just command a game. You put them on the floor, they know basketball. Anthony Davis finishing with 34 points. LeBron finishing with 25. And what do we say? If they can score at least 60 to 65 points, they can do their thing. But if they score 60, 65 points, that's what we expect from Anthony Davis and LeBron James. So don't be surprised by that. What the surprise was the bench.
Everyone scored.
Everyone scored. KCP, Danny Green, Rajon Rondo, Kyle Kuzma, Alex Caruso. All of a sudden, they remembered how to shoot. They're the only team in the bubble. Okay, get this. This is the craziest stat that I read. They're the only team in the bubble during the playoffs that scored less than 20. That shot less than 25% from three. Not once. Not twice, three different games. Less than 25% from three, they shot. They shot three different games. They're the only team to do that. Not only that, in the playoffs, they shot less than 33% from three. Last night they were lights out, absolutely lights out last night. And you know what happened? What I hate to hear is that people are saying, "Oh, Miami got exposed. Miami got exposed." First of all, there is no exposure. What happened last night? What happened is they played the zone. They played the zone exactly. What do we say the two major weaknesses of the zone has been?
Playing outside in the middle shooting and outside
and
shooting.
Playing in the middle. Yes, we just said it backwards.
Yeah.
But that has been the glaring weakness of the zone. And when you have a skill big like Anthony Davis, because if you notice, what Frank Vogel did was he said, okay, I'm taking Dwight out because they're smacking us in the mouth. So he put Anthony Davis at the five, and Miami had... Carter was doing amazingly on Anthony Davis. Bam was doing just fine on Dwight Howard. He took Dwight Howard out, it moved everybody up, and it literally made Anthony Davis damn near unstoppable. He went for 34, had what, 6 rebounds? No, 9 rebounds. 9 rebounds. He was 34-9. So literally that was the adjustment that was made by Vogel. Then you had the outside shooting. Like I said, Danny Green, KCP. It was like KCP made 2 back-to-back threes.
I don't know about you, but every time he shot the ball and the way that ball went through the net, it was just like, who is this player playing right now for them?
And yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing. They had the others. We're talking about the others. They had 3 people off the bench that scored in double digits. Danny Green, KCP, and Alex Caruso scored in double digits. Okay? That has not happened. That hasn't happened. You literally needed to have Anthony Davis and LeBron James score in the high 60s for them to have a chance. And they may have had one other person score in double digits, or they would, it'd be so sporadic, the scoring. So it was rough to watch. It was definitely rough to watch, especially that second quarter. You just got the sense that, Miami's not there. I do want to mention, too, that, Miami, I don't believe that it was so much they're not ready or they weren't ready, because that's also been a narrative. Oh, Miami, the lights are too bright. What I think literally happened is their game plan literally got shoved in their face mid-game. Okay, they expected to be playing against Dwight Howard and against Anthony Davis, and was expecting that lineup, and Vogel made the adjustment early. And to Spo's, credit or discredit, no matter which way you want to see it, he thought that Bam would probably be the better matchup for Anthony Davis.
At times he was, until he got those fouls. And that's a whole other segment where we have to get into, too.
He got 2 fouls, man. That was the one way against Anthony Davis where literally you see the replay. It was all...
Let's jump into that real quick, because, yeah, it's giving me an itch, and that's why I'm stuttering a lot, because that really pissed me off. So yesterday, Jimmy Butler drives in on Danny Green, and he goes up, and he gets fouled, and he makes the and-one. The ref is literally holding the ball, Frank Vogel enough time to relook at the play and then call a challenge afterwards. Say what you want, and this statement I'm about to say, you can say, oh, you're just saying that because your team lost. No, it's not that. Dude, that is cheating. I don't care what you say. That is cheating. You do not do that. And then to overturn the call their way after holding the ball, what else is there to say but that?
And what was weird about that, this is what made it weird. What is the point of the challenge? Because they challenged it, and then when they said the challenge was accepted, they counted the basket, but then said Jimmy Butler still fouled him. That made no sense to me. I'm like, okay, wait. The challenge was whether or not that foul by Danny Green was legitimate or not. If you say it's not legitimate, then the 2 points shouldn't count. But you're saying we're going to count the 2 points, but the foul wasn't legitimate.
How did that? How does that make any sense?
How does that make sense? Because what should have happened was either it was an and one, and Jimmy Butler goes to the line for one.
No points.
It was an offensive foul, and the points don't count.
They literally took away that third point, and they literally just it was such a momentum change that it was just ridiculous after that point.
It completely shifted the momentum. That shifted the momentum. Bam getting those 2 early fouls shifted the momentum, because now you got to depend on guys that haven't played, and it just got ugly. It got ugly so quickly. We were up. It was 43-41, and after that, it just Miami went stagnant. Now another thing too, and again, I'm gonna also co-sign with you could say, oh, it's just that you're a fan of the team. Be fair, Miami. It was less than 3 minutes left in the third quarter. Up until that point, less than 3 minutes left in the third quarter. Now, mind you, we're blown out at this point. Up to that point, they fouled Jimmy Butler to go to line. They say, yo, Miami only attempted 7 free throws this entire game. 7. You mean to tell me that's...
And this is while our players are literally getting dropped to the ground on the other side. Because I don't know if you noticed, Bam hit the floor a couple times. Jimmy definitely hit the floor a bunch of times. No calls. Even Dragic before he got injured. Like, and then the fact of the matter is, we get up, we get back and play defense. Whereas this happens to the Lakers, and they're literally putting on a freaking dramatic piece on HBO Max over here. Freaking just crying, yelling onto the ref, say, okay, you're right, here's your foul call. Like, you can't have that. And Adam Silva needs to step in on that. There needs to be a flopping rule. Well, there needs to be a flopping rule.
And it used to be, because I think here's a few things I think it should change in the NBA. Number one, that flopping, of course, that needs to be fined again. You got to get fined for that again. The other thing is the replay system. They need to just take it away. I'm done with the replay system. The replay system makes no sense. It makes no sense at this point. It really doesn't, because the refs are almost, it feels like the refs are making up rules on the fly for the replay. Just take the replay out. Human error is part of the game. Take the replay out. It's absolutely ridiculous. It doesn't work. There was one series, I think it was versus the Bucks, where there was a clear foul on Jimmy Butler. Clear foul. But they were seeing the replay to see if the ball went off of Jimmy's hand. And I'm like, wait. You can see the foul on the replay.
Clearly, you can't make the call.
But you can't make that call. But you got to make the call whether or not it was an out-of-bounds play on the Heat. And Spoelstra can't challenge whether it's a foul. He can only challenge whether it's an out-of-bounds. You know, so on Jimmy Butler or not. So the replay system does absolutely, but slow the game down and give everybody an extra timeout. That's all it does. So take that away. It's done. And then the last thing, for the love of God, let these people play defense. That made that shift in momentum again, besides the run that they went on, was the Bam fouls. 2 fouls. Bam was looking to be aggressive last night, and he tried, but he got...
To your point, before you continue, fouls. Crowder actually played great defense on AD the beginning of the game, with LeBron.
That's what I'm saying.
Crowder, Adebayo played good. Butler was playing good. And, you know, even Iggy, when he came in, he was playing good. And then all of a sudden, it was just like, I honestly don't have any words, dude. It was a downhill battle from there, man.
Yep. So, you know, again, this game was ugly. There are so many factors in the game that you can't really point to one to say that, oh, this is the reason why we lost, this is the reason why Miami lost, this is the reason why Miami lost, because there are so many. And the thing is that it's incumbent on the Miami Heat team, number one, to tone down on the mistakes. Because if you notice, the Lakers had 5 turnovers, we had 0, but they were still within closing distance. The moment that we matched the same amount of turnovers they did, we were down double digits. So literally, I'm seeing here that the Lakers shot 39.5% from 3. If that happens again, Miami might as well kick chances goodbye. We only shot 31% from 3. Now, I know some people are going to look at the chart for fouls and be like, well, Miami only got called for 4 less fouls than the Lakers did, or got called for 4 less fouls. There's more calls against the Lakers.
That was when we were down by
late game.
Yeah.
It was over. It was 30 plus points. It was over. It was over. Fourth quarter.
To your point, on the fouls, that, okay, so for those of you who don't understand, and I know it's hard for people who haven't worked in the industry of sports to make it even so people aren't talking like how we are, because we know the game. That's why we're talking about it. Is the refs to clean up so nobody could say anything to them. The last 5, maybe even 6 minutes of the game, depending on how big the blowout is, that's when they'll start giving that opposing team every call. Mm-hmm. And
we see it in college.
Yep.
You see it in high school. You see they covered their behinds. That's what happens. That's the politics. You know what I'm saying? I've talked to refs. They said it's the
politics. We used to work with them.
Because they got
to
make sure they cover themselves. Yeah, we worked with them, you know? But across the board, at the end of the day, across the board, I can't point to fouls and say fouls was the reason why.
Oh, no.
I can't point to three-point shooting. You know what I'm saying? But these little things that happened really, really hurt Miami. And then it started pouring when Dragic was out. And then to find out in the middle of the game that he was out for the series, you know, or possibly out for the series, that was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back, as they say, you know. So it was hard to watch.
I do want to say before we continue on, the mentality of both Kendrick Nunn and Tyler Hero this game, mm-hmm. because usually when stuff like this happens, the rookies fold and they just stop playing. And the fact that even though we were getting blown out, Tyler Hero scored 14 points. I mean, he was minus 35 in the plus or minus, but he was balling. He was trying his best to bring us back. And Kendrick Nunn dropped 18 points. He had five rebounds in total, two assists. He went 8-for-11. We're going to need that Kendrick Nunn. We're going to need that for the rest of the series.
We need Kendrick Nunn. At this point, we really need Kendrick Nunn. And real quick, before you continue, just to add context, because you guys got to understand, plus, minus, that literally, it factors in everything. So what was happening last night was that LeBron James on the pick and roll was switching out Tyler Hero and making Tyler Hero defend him. And he was dropping buckets on Hero. So having said that, that's what factored into that minus 35. The 14 points is what he usually does. I think he only had like one or two turnovers, but LeBron James defensively, that's how his plus minus got so bad because.
And what's crazy too is he actually played decent defense at first before we started going under, because there were some switches where he faced up straight at LeBron and LeBron couldn't score, you know, and then, you know, this whole turmoil happened and it was just a disaster from there on out.
Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. At the end of the day, Miami has to figure out a way to switch on the fly. Because, again, you have Rondo on the floor. You have LeBron on the floor that literally can make the team switch stuff on the fly. You got to know when to go in the zone, when to get out the zone, when to go in the man, when to get out of man. Because, to be honest, whatever was happening, we ran a 2-3 zone last night. It wasn't working. It did not work. And to start the game, it was okay. It helped. You know what I'm saying? And it literally, Miami punched them in the mouth. We were getting contested threes, contested jump shots, contested layups. But in the end, talent.
What's crazy is talent wins. The whole playoff series, we have been going, wasn't it 3-2? And now we're down to 2-3?
We're doing 2-3. Okay, we did 2-3 versus the Bucks. We played 2-3.
It was just a shifted 2-3 where the middleman pushed up a little bit more.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they shifted a lot because they put Bam on the wing almost. Yeah. So, you know, but
my thoughts on that real quick. Know. I think we need to move Duncan from that corner spot because he's not quick enough to close out in the corners. We need to put a faster guard, like maybe even a Tyler Hero in that corner, and I want Duncan on the top.
Well, here's where you run into an issue because people can blow by Duncan. That's the thing. That's why they're putting him in the corner, because when you put him at the wing and you got guys like LeBron that could drive right past him, that's why they put him in that corner because, again, too, versus the Pacers. Versus the Bucks, they had guards that could blow right by him. So initially he was on the wing, but it's like it's a pick your poison thing. Would I rather him get beat in the corner, you know, if somebody's shooting threes, or would I rather him get beat, you know, somebody blowing right by him from the wing? Because he doesn't have the lateral quickness enough. So it's a pick your poison. One of the things I would change if I'm Eric Spoelstra, is I think I have to switch the starting lineup up. I mean, now you have no choice.
Yeah, you have no choice.
Guys out. But even if they were there, you got to switch it up. Kendrick Nunn should get a start, I would hope. He needs to get the start. I'm almost flirting with the fact that Iggy should start. Miami tried to go small. It really did not pan out. So I think that Myers Leonard and Kelly Olynyk need to see some minutes. So at this point, there is no point in holding back or testing things. No, put every able body you possibly can out there. Make a rotation. Hey, guys, this is what they're paid to do. They're professionals. They're paid to be ready within a moment's notice.
So real quick, I want to touch on that real quick. Your starting five, who would it be?
I have to go Nunn. I got to go Duncan. I got to go Butler. Of course. Actually, this might surprise you. I think switch it. I think I have to go Nunn. Now, you run the risk now. This is hard. The reason why this is hard is because you got two players who contributed offensively. Bam, 20 and 10. Dragic averaging 22 points per game. Where are you going to get that from? So, you know, but at the same time, I feel like defensively, that's just as important. But
I'll be fair. Let's say Bam got the okay to play.
So Bam is at the five. Ugh, man, this is ugly. I was still starting Nunn. Bam is starting. Butler is starting. Crowder is starting, and Duncan is starting. That's literally what it would be.
So that's your five. That's your starting five.
I have to be. If Bam is there, then because then if not, because we're putting Bam in there, assuming that he could contribute offensively.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how well he could do that, but I'm almost flirting with Kelly starting alongside Bam or Meyer starting alongside Bam because. You need bodies to throw at AD, and it's not gonna be pretty for Miami with AD going small. It doesn't work. It does not work. He's too long. He's too big. We were able to go small versus the Bucks because there was no number two. Chris Middleton was terrible. Eric Bledsoe was terrible. There was no number two, so we were able to go zone against them. We went zone with Boston because we can match them guard for guard, speed for speed, you know. But now you have a perennial big, you have a monster big, you know, a monster big in Anthony Davis. So now it's, do you go small and hope you can put points up on the board? Because that's why you go small, is to out hustle and put some quick points on the board. But when we did that, like I said, we got out manned, out rebounded, out tough. You know, so what do you do?
So do you want to hear my starting lineup?
Go ahead.
So this is assuming, so I'm gonna give you both ways. If we have Bam and if we don't. So if we have Bam, my starting lineup, and let me finish before you react. My starting lineup will be, I'm gonna put Hero at the starting as point. I'm gonna have Duncan at the two. I'm going to have Jimmy at the three. I'm going to have Kelly at the four. And I'm going to have Bam at the five. Now, here's my other if Bam is not here. So, if Bam is not here, I'm actually going to go. I'm going to stay with my Hero at point. I'm going to actually move Jimmy up to shooting guard. I'm going to put Iggy at the three, Crowder at the four, and I'll put, it's obviously either between Myers or Kelly at the five. And I would mainly go possibly Myers for the height, But I can't doubt my boy Kelly like that, because what I saw yesterday from Kelly, AD, even though we were getting blown out, there was instances where AD would go up and Kelly was there for the help block. So I would actually start Kelly and have Myers come off the bench. So that team right there, that is a big team for us.
And I wouldn't be mad. I wouldn't be mad at that at all. You know, I didn't think about starting Hero at the point because I'm so focused on him coming off the bench. But if he got the nod, then, you know, you have Duncan and Nunn coming off the bench. You would also have DJJ coming off the bench, Myers or Kelly, whichever way, coming off the bench.
Now my reason for putting Nunn coming off the bench is because I feel like yesterday was a big statement for Nunn. Nunn actually almost played that sixth spot yesterday, as soon as we lost Dragic. And in the past, if you look at his stats, when he comes off of that sixth spot, that is when he actually excels and actually has decent games, if not good games. And I feel like that would motivate him to play better in that sixth spot. And their bench, I think they were having trouble with Kendrick Nunn. You know, when they brought out the nobodies, LeBron and AD. So that's what I'm saying. I would rather him come off the bench. And Hero, he's going to give you assists. He is going to score. He's going to give you better defense. You know, even though his defense is a little shady, but it is going to be better. And because he's longer, he's taller, and if he has the green light to shoot it, he's going to shoot it.
Yeah.
And make it more than what Nunn is going to make it.
And again, this is where it's so important. Miami has to score.
Yep.
When Miami has to score, we saw literally missing 5 field goals in a row got us down double digits. That's how quick it happened. That's how quickly it happened. So, having said that, I actually like the second lineup you said. If there's no Bam, I actually like that lineup because
we haven't seen that lineup, and I feel like that's something that I don't think the Lakers would be ready for, because that's a defensive lineup. It's a big lineup, and they can all score.
Yeah, because again, Hero, what, 6'6"? Butler is what, 6'4"? How tall is Butler? Here's the thing, but Jimmy Butler, his natural position was a 2.
That's why I think we need to see that. We need to see that again.
That was his natural. So Jimmy Butler 6'7".
Yes.
Hero 6'6". Butler 6'7". Iggy what? 6'8", 6'7". Also, he's about 6'6", 6'7".
Yep.
Crowder same, 6'6", 6'7". And then Kelly or Myers, they're about 6'10", 7'. So you got a big lineup to start, and I wouldn't be mad at that because that puts Iggy. I said the other night I would rather have seen Iggy start
I feel like that's coming.
But what I understood also is that Spo wanted to go with the starting lineup that got him the Eastern Conference Final. That's what Heat fans need to understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Because
they're like, why wouldn't Spo start this part? It's like, wait a minute. Don't reinvent the wheel, okay? The starting lineup he had out there was the starting lineup that got us to the final.
Yeah, for sure.
That's simple. So, having said that, now that we know that that's not working, now he can make the adjustments. It's one game.
That's one thing I do want to touch on. Like, the amount of, it's over, all this. I mean, at some point,
it's been unreal.
It has been, and at a point, I feel like I understand it because we have been blessed to not be in this position in the whole playoff series. But guys, we have a whole series. There's 6 games left, guys. 6 games. We have a whole series left. The playoffs, the finals, it's not over yet. It is not over yet. It's far from that. Believe me.
Far from over.
It's far from over. And Well, we'll get into that after the ad break. We had some nice little interview report with Rachel Nichols with Jimmy Butler that he touched on something that I really want to get on, and I feel like it's something that us fans need to hear. And there's other news that has been going around that actually rubbed me the wrong way at first. It actually took me three times to listen to it, watch it, to watch it again with a different set of eyes. And I think AJ knows exactly what I'm talking about. But yeah, any last things you want to touch on before we go on to quick ad break?
No, I'm good, man. That's it for me.
All right. So we'll be right back, guys. We're gonna go take that ad break, and we'll be right back. All right. So let's go ahead and jump right into these reports. So Butler saying he's not using injuries as an excuse. Who cares? We're still expected to win. And to get more in detailed in that, who cares? Yes, as in he said that towards us. Obviously, he said if Dragic could be on the floor, if Bam could be on the floor, he wants these guys on there with him, fighting with him, battling with him on the court. But he says if they're not, we need to move forward. At the end of the day, people are still expecting us to win. And that type of mentality is what's going to rally us together to keep moving forward and keep fighting. It's like we've been preaching this since yesterday, since before we went on the ad break. It's not over, guys. We are still in this. If anything, we're more in this now than we were ever before. We're fighting for Dragic. We're potentially fighting for Bam. We're fighting for each other. And we're going to do this. Don't give up hope yet. So I just want to know, AJ, what are your thoughts on these reports that Butler has been saying and how you know, he says we're expected to win?
I mean, you know, it's like you just said, you know, but aside from that, it's the reason why Miami culture matches with Butler. That's the reason why, because Miami has not made excuses over the years, ever. Never made excuses. Pat Riley had every reason to make an excuse why we didn't make the playoffs after Chris Bosh got the blood clots. But he didn't make excuses. What did he do? He went and got vets. He went and got other players and said, okay, let's try this. Then we had a team that literally started the season terribly. And then the second half, they had the second best second half of the season than in the entire NBA. And literally did not make the playoffs by
tie.
A half a game, a tie.
Yeah, a tie.
So it was a tie, and the Bulls won the tiebreaker, so that put them in the playoffs. You know, but again, Pat Riley didn't make excuses. So Miami and Miami culture, we don't make excuses for not making the playoffs or missing games. You can analyze and point to certain things as to reasons why things happen, but at the end of the day, those aren't excuses. And Jimmy Butler, literally, I love the attitude. I love the confidence, because this is just who he is. This is not anything new. This is not anything contrived or made up. This is exactly who Jimmy is and always has been. He's been a rough
guy. Also, what he stated in this article, well, it was an interview. He stated he needs to be better. He said he needs to dig down deep and play like he's never played before. And the look in his face when Izzy's saying this, you can tell we are about to see Jimmy grow bulls, you know, the bullhorns in his head and just go off.
Well, if I could be just a little, contrary, but if I could just say this, I thought that I was seeing that in game one with Jimmy Butler. He was taking threes. Yep. He was taking threes without, and he shot 50%.
Making them.
He was making them. You know, so I, I felt like, because at this point, Miami has absolutely nothing to lose. The pressure is more on the Lakers. I don't care how you slice it. Yeah, they blew us out game one, but the pressure is more on them to win. We can literally, we tie this series tomorrow, it is a completely different series, however way you slice it. So I love the comment by Jimmy Butler. And really, this is what leadership means. This is what leadership does. The question is, are the others going to embrace it? Are the others going to step up? Are the others going to hold themselves accountable? Are the others looking, not just looking to Jimmy, but really putting into action what Jimmy is saying? That'll be the question.
Looking and to impact the game.
Yeah, I have no doubt that they will. But Tyler Hero, you know, we need you to step up. Iggy, we need you to be big for us. Crowder, who did step up in game one, we need you to be big for us again. Myers
and Leonard. I was so happy for Crowder, man. He was he was in a slump.
It felt like everything was going down for him. So that's a good sign. It's a welcoming sign. So yeah. Myers Leonard, we got to see something from you. You know, people forget Portland. When he was in Portland, man, I'm not saying he gave AD problems because he didn't give him problems, but he matched up.
He was scoring that ball
pretty well. Yeah, he matched up pretty well with AD. So. So we just need to see everyone step up. And I think without any doubt in my mind, because the look on Spoelstra's face last night, guys, it was not, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? This was, okay, what am I going to do? He was literally, you could tell he was just sitting there figuring it out. He was drawing X's and O's in his head because that type of blowout, you can't, there's nothing you could do on the fly. There's nothing you could do. You let him play it out. You compete. And then
well, it's hard. It's hard when you have that blowout, and then on top of that, nothing is going your way. It's honestly, and this is the perfect analogy I can give it. We were in quicksand yesterday. It was one thing after another, and we just kept sinking and sinking and sinking and sinking until we finally were able to grab onto that rope and kind of like just hold ourselves coming up to make it a decent score towards the end of the game.
Yep.
But it was honestly quicksand the whole night. The whole night it was quicksand. The refs were against us. You know, everything was against us. And it was just, you know, we had to play through it. Yeah. We had to get through that first game.
Yeah. Tyler Hero, I saw a couple of times. If you're going to be the point guard, you can't be careless with the ball. You know?
No, yeah. No, that's true.
That was another. We gave him a free possession that they scored on. It was, even though it was just one possession, it's just mistakes like that. That momentum is an underrated aspect of sports. When you give a team momentum, man,
and I don't want to sound like I'm defending Hero. To that, that is when we started becoming stagnant and everybody stopped going to the ball. Hero had to make an impossible pass because you had Bam all the way to the side. Well, because at this point, Jimmy, at that exact play that you just talked about, Jimmy was on the bench. And Bam was on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Bam, instead of going to the ball, he was posting up at the elbow asking for the pass. Now, it's not an excuse. The pass should have got there. But the swarm of defense that Hero was getting all night long because of the player that he is, you can't ask a rookie to do something like that. You need to go get that ball.
But to counter that, it's because he's a rookie that happened.
You know, oh, of course, of it's course, because of
he
course.
Was, Rondo, being the veteran that he was, he understood, okay, this young fella is not understanding the moment. And I don't think all of the team, the young guys, I don't think they understood the moment. That's not a dig. It's just you've never been at that level of competition. You know, now
part of me, as crazy as this was, part of me is okay with the first game being the way it was.
I'm fine with the first game.
Because it woke everybody up.
Yeah, I'm fine. Like I said, I thought I was going to be a lot more bummed out than I've been all day. But again, this is a 7-game series. It's 6 series. The next, you know, you got to be able to win. You got to be able to win game 2. Game 2 is so important. So important.
It's funny. If we win game 2, you know what matches up even crazier? That little prediction, that little mirroring that we did yesterday on the episode.
Oh, yeah.
Dallas and the Heat.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So we split against the Lakers tomorrow. I believe that will be the narrative will completely change. Narrative will completely change tomorrow this coming Monday, because I believe we play Friday And I believe we play again on Sunday.
Sunday at 7:30.
Yeah. So come Monday, somebody's going to be either 2-1 or 3. It's going to be either 2-1 or it's going to be
2-1.
3-0. It'll be
either 3-0.
So we'll see what Miami is made of. And I know that they're made of, I know they got the dog in them. I know they could do this because they've shown that they could do it all season.
Yep. Yep. That is a factor. Okay. So now we're going, and I'm going to let you say the report. I'm going to give my opinion on it, and then we could go in and let you give you yours. So LeBron James, he had an interview at the end of the game, and he said some things. You can go ahead and say it, AJ.
Yeah. I don't have it verbatim. But basically what he was saying was his motivation for game one was because of 2011. And he said in 2011, what it was that he was heavily favored and they lost. They lost the game. And I believe it was game two that they lost.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
So context wise too, they had asked him a question on, you know, it seemed like you were yelling at your teammates because they weren't playing defense towards the end of the stretch when you guys were blowing the Heat out. And that is when he said this statement you know, what AJ just said about being up so much in 2011 mm-hmm. against the Miami Heat. You know what I mean? Against the Dallas Mavericks. Mm-hmm. When he was in the Heat.
Right.
And then, so he mentioned, you can go ahead and you continue. I just wanted to throw that context in there.
Yeah, and he mentioned 2011. He mentioned how they were heavily favored. But he also mentioned in his comments that it's what gave him the motivation, you know, was because the expectation was so big for them to kill it. And they dropped the ball that game, especially they were up by so much. And literally, he described Dwayne Wade shooting that ball. I remember they replayed it the next day on ESPN. They were like, they were bragging. And they were just being so cocky about it. And then we know the rest. It was a snowball effect. It went downhill. So, excuse me, my initial reaction when I heard it was, why the heck does 2011 matter? Why does 2011 matter? Because you had 9 other finals that you can point to, okay? 9 other finals. Now, what I do understand is that 2011, he was heavily favored with the Heat. What I didn't realize was that 2012, he wasn't favored. 2013, he and the Heat weren't favored. 2014, we weren't favored. 2015, 16, 17, and 18, LeBron James was not favored. This is the first year, the first season since 2011. 2010. This is the first. And then don't forget 07. 07, he wasn't.
Oh, yeah, with the Cavs. With the Cavs.
So this is the first. This season, this finals, and the 2011, 2010, 2011 finals are the only two finals where LeBron James-led team was heavily favored, okay? I didn't realize that. So still haven't said that. I understand the comparison, why he's making the comparison, that why he went to 2011. Because initially it felt like it was a shot. Initially it felt like, you know, okay, you're playing Miami. You know how badly that stings. And the fact that after 2011, he was trying to get Spoelstra fired. You know, so it was like, and I'm not going to, he won't admit he was trying to get her fired, but he kept asking Pat Riley, you still don't want to coach. You still don't want to coach. And he was like, no, Eric got it. So initially it felt like a shot, but when I was able to read it in context, number one, the comment, but then number two, realizing that he's never been favored in any, and he was only favored in 2 out of the 10, now 10 finals appearances. It's like, okay, this was motivation for him because not because of the favor, but because he knows what it feels like to be favored and to drop the ball.
Yeah. And you know, so now I'm going to go ahead and give my piece on that. At first, guys, I wanted to put a bounty on LeBron's head.
after saying this, because I took that as shade. I took it as shade at Pat Riley mentioning D-Wade. I took it as shade. Eric Spoelstra. I took it as shade as us as fans. I took it as shade as just as a team in general. And, you know, speaking with my other friends and kind of unloading, seeing this interview through hateful eyes, I had texted everyone I knew, and I was going off of my text messages until it took a friend of mine to sit there and actually explain to me what it was that was going on and why he stated that. Because all I heard was that. I didn't even see the question and the way it was given. I didn't see, oh, why were you so, you know, as how I stated before, AJ said his point that, you know, why were you so adamant on defense? Why were you telling your guys keep on going, yelling them, being upset at them, and you guys are up by 30? You know, I didn't get that side until I took my deep breath. I walked around a little at work and I looked at it again, and then I realized one thing, and AJ was the one to tell me this earlier today. One thing about LeBron, he's a very indirect person, and a lot of what he said, he actually said it towards himself, and because he knew he dropped the ball. And the thing is, he indirectly said it towards himself, towards that Heat team in general, and just as a whole, which we all dropped the ball in 2011. He was a big factor, but the fact of the matter is, he's playing the Heat right now. So, of course, especially 2011, losing against Dallas, is going to be fresh in his mind, especially when you're in a bubble and all you have are news reports everywhere of this whole Pat Riley and LeBron James, you know, a rivalry. And this is nowhere near as I'm making an excuse or nothing like that. I'm just speaking in clear context, and I'm actually correcting myself because I saw this I saw this as hate towards Miami.
Yeah.
And I had to check myself and make sure that what I was doing was right, which it wasn't. And I admitted to myself and my buddies that we got into it, almost lost friendships, man, over this finals game. You know, we came to an agreement, and I admitted that I was wrong. And I'm admitting on my podcast live right here that I was wrong in the way I saw this at first.
Yeah, and the thing is too, is it's the same with me too, because this is what people have to understand, and I know we have more than just Heat fans that listen, but so you got to understand something. The Miami Heat, we won in 2006 with a Shaq that was not in his prime, but it was the emergence of D-Wade, okay? When 2010 came around and LeBron came, after LeBron's stint, it's like the sports media completely forgot that Miami won before LeBron even got here. Okay.
Yep.
Then they call. Now, I always say we should have three-peated. I always said that when LeBron was here, we should have three-peated. Point blank, period. I really feel like we should have three-peated, but we did not. But to call LeBron's stint in Miami a failure by a lot of these sports pundits and whatnot, that was a slap in the face. It's like, really, there's no respect for the Miami Heat organization. LeBron leaves, and immediately it's Miami's not going to make the playoffs, even with the Chris Bosh, even with the Dwayne Wade. And they were right, but because of injury, not because we were all together and we just couldn't figure it out, because we started the season off well. Then the following season,
Bosh had one of the best seasons in his career.
One of the best starts, and because he went out the All Star. Then the following season, or in the middle of that season, we were able to acquire Goran Dragic. So then the following year, I believe, which was 2016, we get to the playoffs. Dwayne Wade has that monster game in Charlotte to remind everybody who he is. then it's well, they're only then we get, I believe we got swept, right, by Toronto in the semis. Yep. And it was, yeah, they're nothing without LeBron. They're nothing without LeBron. And I'm going somewhere with this, so just bear with me. They're nothing without LeBron. They can't do anything without LeBron. Unfortunately, they don't have LeBron in South Beach to save them. Then the following season, that offseason, we lose Dwayne Wade. Something I never thought that would ever happen. I don't think any Heat fan thought that that would happen. But we lost Dwayne Wade. We lose Dwayne Wade. And then not only do we lose Dwayne Wade, we found out that Bosh is not going to return as a player because of the blood clot. So we don't make the playoffs that year. The following year, now we're in 2018. Mid-season, Dwayne Wade comes back, but it's not enough to make the playoffs.
No.
Okay? So then we do make the playoffs, and we're able to beat the Sixers one game, but then that was it. Okay? So, having said all that, everything that I just broke down, the sports pundits, the coverage from sports pundits whenever it came to Miami, the NBA fan base, the basketball fan base that injects LeBron in everything Miami does, that felt so personal to a lot of Heat fans. It's, at least I won't even indict everyone. I'll say just me as a Heat fan. It felt so personal that it was like, why, as a fan now, of course, why in the world do people believe we're just nothing without LeBron? Now we finally get to the finals, 6 years removed from when LeBron left. 6 years removed, and it so happens to be against LeBron James. And the way we lost, after the expectation of at least being able to compete and start hearing that noise again that we've been hearing from 2014 till you know, before the playoffs started, it was like, wow, really, Miami still gets no respect. And then LeBron saying what he said, you know, without the context, it felt personal.
Yeah.
So, you know, having said all that, that's what I
was and a lot of that too. A lot of that too, man, that out of context, you know, you read the report and these media people, I mean, they get paid for a reason. They made it seem like he was throwing shade at us,
right,
you know, before you actually saw the interview and you were like, okay, you know,
and
okay,
remember,
all right, let's take
and
a step back.
Remember, Bron has thrown shade now in Miami. He used to call us.
Oh, he has.
Say that franchise I used to play for. He didn't even mention the Miami Heat. He wouldn't say that. In 2015, he said he had motivation in the beginning of the season to prove a point, and then he lost. And then the following year, he came back after being down 1-3, and the reporter asked, oh, what was your motivation? He said, I'll tell you later. See, he didn't even want to say it on camera. And he told him off camera that when he left, there were people in the Heat organization that told him that he was making a big mistake. And, you know, he's killing the dynasty. And then we end up finding out that that was Pat Riley. So that was his big motivation in 2016. And then everybody's throwing shade at Pat Riley. Pat Riley does an interview. He does two interviews. The first interview, he talks about how, you know, it was ridiculous how LeBron, not how LeBron left, but he felt like it killed the dynasty, because reports that I also read was that Pat Riley actually wanted out, was gonna leave Miami and retire. But since LeBron James left, it was like for him, he felt indebted, so he stayed, which is amazing. He stayed.
That is what a story.
And 6 years later, he got them back to the finals. So Miami as a city, as a sports city, has never gotten the respect that they've deserved. When 06, we won. No respect. 2012, we won. Oh, it was a shortened season. You played against a bunch of kids. 2013. Oh, now they could barely find any excuse for 2013, because that was a game 7 that just could not ever be forgotten. And then we won't even talk about game 6, because that's just legendary within itself. 2014.
Yeah.
Oh, look what happened. Look what happened. Oh, LeBron has no help. LeBron is carrying D-Wade. LeBron is carrying
Baby Kawhi. Kawhi.
And then I'm like, nobody saw the emergence of Kawhi. The kid came out and started scoring 20 points a game, something he hadn't done all season. So again, you know, it was personal. It felt personal. as a fan, because it was just the same. It was like a broken record. It sounded like a broken record.
Yeah. Yeah, that was tough, man. That was tough today. And you know, that's why I wanted to just clear the air, let it all out here. And, you know, we're men. We can admit when we're wrong. And we did. Yeah, so absolutely. Now it's time to move forward.
Game two.
So game two for tomorrow, 9. Yeah, get ready for that, man, because we will be ready for that. So real quick, news around the league. And my man, if you would not believe this, we should write a book, because almost everything we've been saying is hitting on the nose. And I believe you were the one to mention it about Doc Rivers heading over to Philadelphia 76ers. Yep. And he signed a 5-year deal to coach them.
Yep.
That is, watch out for the East, guys, because now the East is what the West once was.
Yeah. I love the signing. I saw this signing because I just felt like it was a great fit. What the biggest thing now is, I think everybody could put to rest that Embiid is going to force a trade to Miami to be with Butler. Can put that to rest, because you have a coach like Doc Rivers, you're going to want to stay and see what he's about. You know, now if it doesn't work out between him and Rivers, then okay, maybe we'll start saying Embiid to Miami. But the only thing. The one thing that I would say the most is that Doc Rivers is not making any major decisions on personnel. I don't know how much that may hurt or help them, but the fact that he could focus on coaching those young guys, and he gets
now here's my question on that. When he was in Boston, I don't mean to cut you off, but in Boston, did he have any, like, when he first started coaching and they won that championship, did he have any say on, like, personnel and all that stuff? No, it was all about coaching, right?
Danny Ainge had all this. Was it Danny Ainge was the GM at the time? I believe so.
I'm not too sure. But okay.
Yeah, he didn't get any type of GM power until he went to the Clippers. And
so that right there, that is a plus for the Sixers, because he, as a coach, and we have stated this before, as a coach and solely as a coach, he's actually really good.
Yeah, he's very good.
And when he focuses on it, that it excels.
Yeah,
tremendously.
Tyronn Lue was under Doc Rivers. Tom Thibodeau was under Doc Rivers. Those are two, you know, people may not put Ty Lue as a great coach, but definitely Tom Thibodeau, he's a great coach. So, yeah. And I believe he's coaching the Knicks next season. So,
wow.
So, you know, I think that the signing is great for the young players because, and yes, I just confirmed Danny Ainge was the GM at the time when Doc Rivers was in Boston. So, I think it's a good move for the Sixers. He gets to coach young guys like Ben Simmons and Embiid. And where it is that they needed a culture change, to be honest. That's the most important thing. Forget defensive schemes. Forget offensive schemes. They needed a culture change. And with Doc Rivers, that's what they're getting. So,
do you think they're going to get rid of Ben Simmons?
I don't know. I highly doubt that. I doubt that Doc Rivers would go there with them saying, yeah, we're going to get rid of Ben Simmons, though. The opportunity to play with a player as versatile as Ben Simmons is, as far as the point forward type of thing, I just can't imagine him signing on and then trading him. I believe that literally what we saw between Embiid and Ben Simmons was the culture. Culture wasn't good. It was poisonous. So I believe that if it's unavoidable, that he would bring both of them to the table and be like, all right, this is what we got to do. And if y'all are not on board, then, you know, one of you got to go, because that's literally what it's going to come down to.
Yeah.
So I love the signing.
I see if they do keep him, I see them using Ben Simmons almost as a Rondo, but obviously a bigger version of a Rondo, how Doc used him in that old Boston Unity.
You know, because Rondo couldn't shoot, but he could lay up, he could pass, and that's pretty much what Ben Simmons is, just a way bigger version of
it. I think the biggest downfall for the Clippers was the fact they didn't have some sort of facilitator at the point. You have Patrick Beverley, who's just a dog on defense, but not really not really can control the tempo or control the offense. You have that in Ben Simmons. So now it becomes, what are you going to do with that? And Doc has the opportunity to get other players, get the others involved. Now, what kind of player personnel they end up signing in the offseason, that's a whole nother question. You know, that would need to be answered, another puzzle that would need to be solved, because personnel-wise, they don't have it. They just literally, they have Embiid and Ben Simmons. But if Ben Simmons emerges, because I don't believe he quite emerged yet. I believe he had flashes of it.
Yeah, and all that, it's with coaching, it's coaching. All that's with coaching.
It comes with coaching, and it's on the player also, but it definitely is coaching. You have a coach that motivates you and tells you to take the shot or tells you go get it or whatever. That definitely factors in. So I love this signing. Look out east. It's still Heat and five, but, you know, but I like this signing. I do.
So with that being said, you know, what are your thoughts on the other teams around the league that, you know, making some moves? I mean, I know on the East, we don't know if the Bucks are going to get rid of their coach yet or if they have already. Like I said, we have, the Clippers now for sure. We have the Clippers of, you know, getting rid of Doc and, you know, we have Houston.
Yeah. You know, I think that, what's going to be interesting, obviously everybody's looking to see where D'Antoni's going. Everybody's going to see who's going to be the next Clippers coach. Everybody's going to want to see what Houston is going to do, because for the love of God, to me, Houston is not a team. They're just a bunch of individuals at this point, because there's no cohesive. You don't see any sort of camaraderie. You just have two very good players and three other, you know, I guess solid role players, but they don't have any real chemistry. And it's not just because they lost. It's literally because you can look at the eye test. They just don't do well. I'm curious to see what the Pelicans are going to do. I really actually wanted to see if Doc was surprised us and go to the Pelicans and coach that young team.
That would have been crazy. Because
that would have catapulted them, but we'll see what happens with the Pelicans. I'm interested to see if...
You know, I didn't even think about the Pelicans. That could be a landing spot for D'Antoni.
Yeah, but the only reason I don't like it is because you're getting away from the defensive end, the defensive side. And then only that, you have a coach as old as D'Antoni, and he's going to be coaching a bunch of young guys. Now you got to wait about 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, true.
So, if he's willing to do that, then by all means. But I just feel like he would want a team. I feel like he's going to go to Indiana. I know that you said for you, you think it's the Clippers.
I really think it's the Clippers with Chris Paul coming.
And the thing is that you might be right, at least with the Clippers, because, you know, as we stated in the other episode, hearing that Victor Oladipo wants out, and there's reports that Miles Turner wants out. So would he go to that situation with just TJ Warren? I mean, you know, so I really do see, I think it's more likely, it may be more likely it'd be the Clippers, unless the Clippers do want to hire within house and get Tyronn Lue on board as a head coach.
That would be a nice move.
This team may surprise you, but before I get to that team, Brooklyn, I'm very curious what Kyrie and KD is going to look like with Steve Nash. I think that's going to be interesting because Steve Nash used to work with KD so much. They built a relationship in Golden State. So that's going to be interesting, and especially with Kyrie.
Well, they actually reported on that it's, I believe Kyrie said it. It's going to be a collaborative coaching, which I think that's pretty cool.
Mention Kyrie. You think it's awesome. I think it's terrible, because Kyrie Irving, you're a player. A player plays and gets coached. A player does not coach, you know? So a former player coach who doesn't wear the jersey anymore. They coach, but Kyrie, sit down somewhere, man. Kyrie literally, you know, the earth is flat. You know, let's start our own league. Like, kid, like, come on. You left Cleveland and you wanted to be the guy in Boston. Then you promise Boston you're not going nowhere. And then you leave because you're a locker room cancer. You go to Brooklyn and you kill it in Brooklyn, but you get injured. KD comes on board. But now you don't want, now it's a collaborative effort on coaching. How do you undermine a coach that hasn't even coached yet by saying that? So, again, I think Kyrie just needs to have several seats. KD needs to get on the phone with him now if he has it and say, hey, take your calm down pills. Steve Nash is the one that's running this ship, and we're the shipmates. You know, it's not a bunch of captains running the ship. You know, that are...
And the fact of the matter is that he used to be a point guard is even... I love that aspect of coaching, that when you used to be a point guard and now you're actually coaching the whole ship of the team, it's honestly amazing.
Look at Steve Kerr. He got a few championships out of it. So having said that, the last team I'm actually the most interested in that may surprise people is the New York Knicks. Because in my opinion, the NBA is just a different feel when there's no Knicks. When there's no New York Knicks or there's no Lakers. You see that the Lakers are in it and it's Lake Show this, Lake Show that, Lake Show this, Lake Show that. The specter of the Lakers is just the allure, you know, the West, you know, and then of course, you know, God rest his soul with Kobe dying, the spotlight is even brighter. But the Knicks, man, I mean, nobody else misses Madison Square Garden games on Christmas. That got canceled because they were so bad. I always look forward to a game in Madison Square Garden because they always were crazy lit, you know? So I'm interested in seeing what the Knicks are going to do. They got my boy over there, RJ Barrett, who went to Duke, who I believe may at least take a step in the right direction. He needs to. And honestly, all of them taking a step in the right direction would be an upgrade. So I guess that doesn't matter that much either. But I'm interested to see what the Knicks do. I really am.
You touched on the Pelicans and how, you know, it would have been nice to see Doc over there. I feel like he's kind of underrated as a coach. He obviously came up through our system. I would like to see Fizdale over at the Pelicans, man. I would really like to see that too.
I think Memphis, I believe the Knicks actually tainted or tarnished Fizdale. I think they blackballed him. I believe Memphis blackballed him also because he got fired from both. People couldn't believe it. Apparently he and Gasol didn't get along and Gasol wanted him out, and then Gasol got traded soon after that. So and then with the Knicks, you traded Porzingis the year that Fizdale got there. So what else do you want from him? You know, he's working with a brand new team. You know, Dennis Smith Jr. disappeared from any spotlight he was supposed to be in. You get a young team, and they started doing fairly. They went on a couple runs, but I mean, it's still they didn't have the personnel, and you let them go so quickly. So that's where the politics of the league you don't really like. But then you have the Pelicans. I would love to see him with the Pelicans because now he has talent that he could coach, strong talent that he could coach, because they have a young core that is going to roll over in the West. I don't care what anybody says. Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and Zion Williamson, mark my words, they are going to be in it to win it next year. Even if they get to the Western Conference Finals, they're going to be all right. So I'm interested in that too. I wonder if also Mark Jackson gets a coaching opportunity, for the love of God.
But I don't know, man. He's everywhere right now on you know, doing the announcer thing and all that stuff.
Just doing the announcing because he didn't like the blackball job that they did on him in Golden State. Because they really did blackball him, not just because they fired him, but it was things apparently within the organization that they didn't like about him. He took those boys; they got ousted in the first round 1 year. Then they got ousted in the semis, and then they took the champs, the reigning champs, took them 7 games, and lost. And then he gets fired. Like, what more do you want from him? So it was levels to it. And he told everybody before people were saying it. He said, before it's said and done, Klay Thompson and Steph Curry is going to be the best backcourt that basketball has ever seen. And he wasn't wrong. He wasn't wrong. People scoffed at him. They were laughing at him about it. And he was not wrong. He developed those guys from the draft. He developed them, and he developed Draymond. But Draymond got the starting position under Kerr. So yeah, I would love to see him get a chance. And I think with the Pelicans, I think he would be that would be a great candidate for the Pelicans.
Oh, yeah, man, I totally agree with you on that. Well, I think that's all we got for today, guys. Tomorrow, we have game 2. And we are going to see something that we have not seen yet out of Eric Spoelstra's bag of tricks. We're going to see it all, man. And it was tough yesterday, but I felt like it was better that we saw that yesterday and not win and then see it later in the season, you know, in the series. So, yeah, guys, just get ready for the heat, man. Get ready. And AJ, you go ahead and start with your plug, man. I know you got some news to drop right now, so go ahead.
You already know AJ_SMG on Instagram. Next week, we are releasing the single Almost. So it is coming out next weekend, guys. This song is great. We're going to have some interview dates coming up with this podcast. Silos has been more than gracious enough to plug us in for a promo, so we really appreciate it. Sean Patrick, one of Davey's own local artists, endorsed and sponsored by Victor Watch. He's really taking off. I mean, the guy's taking off. So, we're releasing a single together next week, and there'll be more dates to follow. Next week as we get closer to the release time, for an interview. So appreciate the space as usual, and go Heat, man. We're going to get this tomorrow. We're tying it up.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, you guys already know, you can go follow me on Twitch, Facebook, Instagram at The Real Talk with Silos. I will have my interviews with AJ and Sean after tomorrow's game, once we do our Heat special. So stay tuned for that. But yeah, guys, let's go Heat, man. And like I always been saying, if you haven't voted yet, go vote. It's very important. All right, guys, we'll catch y'all.